But realize this, that in the last days difficult times will come. But lo, there will be signs that the end walks among thee, even as the android walks among true devices. Know thee the signs, and ye shall prepare, even as the geek shall back up his data to stave off calamity. The earth shall move, and the skies darken, great winds will blow, and the seas themselves shall know no peace. And there will be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity. The sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And Joss Whedon shall be made free to make a major studio movie with epic budget and stars that outshine the very firmament, and yet the studios will not interfere, leaving Joss to give unto us the movie that he intended. And the Apple Context Machine shall be produced in weeks back to back, yet without force and neither by contractual advertising obligation. Jeff and Brian shall speak the truth, and you will know that truth by the conviction in their words.
Today is May 3rd, 2012, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 193, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, street corner prophet. You get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on anything or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, Brian, I'm picturing you now wearing your burlap robes and tattered sandals, standing on top of a battered old box, spouting off your gems of wisdom.
Do you have a camera on me?
I do. That, and I know what what our office wardrobe requirements are.
Yeah, well, it does seem like a sign of the end times that we are doing two back-to-back shows. I mean, not to mention, of course, Avengers.
That's right, because Avengers actually opens at midnight tonight, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, end of times.
End of times. I think it must be. It just must be. So, nonetheless, we are here for the second. We told you we'd do it like we told you. We said we're going to start it up. And okay, we actually said we'll see.
Yes,
that's what we actually said.
That is exactly what we said. And here we are recording 2 weeks in a row. And I'm really glad that I'm sitting down because I think I'm just as shocked as everyone else.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe we'll make it three in a row next week.
Could be. All right, that was a great show. See you guys next week, maybe.
No, we should actually. We have a few things to talk about this week.
Yeah, I know, but I thought maybe we should just quit while we were ahead. But all right, we'll do
the news. We're not ahead yet, man.
Well, based on our track record, I'm thinking we are.
All right, fair enough. Nonetheless, though, let's. You want to talk about Barnes & Noble and Microsoft, or Microsoft and Barnes & Noble, or Microsoft and Nook? I don't know. Which way should we pitch that?
So many choices. Let's call it Microsoft and Nook, because Barnes & Noble is actually creating a subsidiary company that consolidates their Nook business and their college book business.
Now, are they spinning it off, or is it a new division?
It's they're calling it a subsidiary company. They don't even have an official name for it yet. Mm. In their press release, they refer to it as NewCo, N-E-W-C-O. Because they're oh so clever, and I'm thinking that they should just stick with that.
Well, you know, do you remember when they came out with the all new Nook? and I mocked that name mercilessly, and then Apple does the same thing and calls iPad 3 the new iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same, yeah. One's laughable and one's embarrassing.
And we'll leave that up to our listeners to decide which is which.
Fair enough.
That makes the show interactive.
Yes, it does. It does. So really, it sounds like what Microsoft or Barnes & Noble, sorry, is doing is they're really just trying to put everything in place so that when they go belly up, Nook is all set to stay alive on its own.
I think that sounds like a pretty safe bet. Yeah. And actually, we should give our listeners a tiny bit of backstory because some of them may not have heard or read the news yet, although I find it hard to believe that there's anyone out there that hasn't read every single story at Mac Observer.
That's true.
So for those of you that were on dial-up connections and couldn't get everything to load, Microsoft is investing something.
You have mail. Sorry.
You know, I'm thinking I should get a hold of that audio clip and use that as the alert tone on my iPhone when new messages come in.
You should do that.
I need to. Okay, if a listener out there has that audio clip, would you please send it to me?
Yes. Send it to Jeff so that he can then set it up for me to use.
You know, I think it's awesome that we're both really grounded in reality like that. But I digress. Back to the backstory. Microsoft is investing $300-something million in Barnes & Noble for this new business spinoff that handles Nook and college.
Not technically a spinoff yet.
Not yet. But okay. The subsidiary company that is in development in the gestation phase. It is a pupa of companies. And wow, can you tell I'm feeling better?
Yes. But yeah, folks, Jeff's been working all week in the grip of nasty allergies. So first of all, polite round of applause for being such a trooper. And secondly, I am glad you're feeling better.
I'm glad I'm feeling better too. I'm probably really annoying all our listeners because I haven't completed a single sentence yet. But anyhow, back to the 300 and something million. So Microsoft is investing that into Barnes & Noble for this whole ebook Nook thing. And what they get out of it on the surface is a guarantee that there will be a Nook application for Windows 8. What Barnes & Noble is getting out of this is an end to their patent lawsuit that Microsoft had brought against them for...
And $300 million.
Yeah, $300 million. Yeah. And the patent lawsuit where Microsoft was trying to bring down Barnes & Noble for the technology used in the Nook, Barnes & Noble now has a royalty-free license for all of that technology.
Yeah, which is all very interesting. And I think that a lot of people might wonder what the hell Microsoft is getting out of it.
Microsoft is buying their way into a market that they haven't been able to penetrate yet. Yeah, I said penetrate.
Well, you're not off to a good start, man.
No, but no, we're just not.
Right. So Microsoft is getting that. And then I think that the other thing, I think that they're really getting two things. One, they're going to keep a competitor in the market to blunt Amazon's power. And Amazon is intruding into Microsoft's space with its Fire device, the same way they're intruding into Apple's space.
Yes, right? Yes. And I see this as more of a strategic move to position themselves against Amazon as opposed to positioning themselves against Apple because, well, you have to pick your fights. And I think And I think going up against Amazon right now is a more logical fight for Microsoft than trying to dethrone the iPad.
Well, can I play devil's advocate?
Of course you can.
Even though that's John Keats' title?
Yeah, but, you know, okay, so you can be advocate by proxy.
Okay. I think that that there is actually a play against Apple here, too. And that play is shoring up Microsoft's own deficiencies when it comes to the Windows Mobile, or in the case of their nasty vision for Windows 8, their Windows 8 ecosystem. And that is, in this case, book content. And, you know, we've talked about, you and I have talked about, and we've written about the fact that one of the things that makes Apple's iPhone and iPad so competitive, but especially the iPad, is the ecosystem of content. And if you remember about a year and a half ago or so, when I argued that Amazon and Microsoft were the two companies that could conceivably compete with the iPad. Mm-hmm. Amazon for its ecosystem of content, and Microsoft for its foothold in the living room. Microsoft chose to ignore my suggestion, but it seems like this Nook business could give them a bunch of content that they don't necessarily already have on their own, without them having to do what Apple did with iBooks.
All right. So the first part of what I'm saying, they're buying their way into the market. That sounds like something we're agreeing on. Mm-hmm. And so if I were to temper what I said to be more in line with what you're saying, I would change that to, for the near term, Microsoft is taking on Amazon by teaming up with Barnes & Noble for the Nook. But they have a long-term goal, which involves taking away market share from Apple as well.
Yeah, or just gaining any market share that they can for Windows Mobile / Windows 8.
Sure. And realistically, I think, at least for now, that market share will come at the expense of Amazon and other Android tablet makers, and not from Apple.
Yeah, I definitely, that's a possibility. But, you know, there's a lot of other content that Microsoft doesn't necessarily have deals in, video in particular. They do have what am I saying? They've got the Zune marketplace.
And they have a lot of deals for Xbox. So they can probably make the Xbox content available to their Windows 8 tablet users as well.
Right. Which is the thing I think that they should be. You know, their Microsoft's whole angle for Windows 8 is to make the tablet and the PC the same. I just think that's just wrong.
I agree with you completely on that. And I'm not surprised Microsoft is doing this, even though they had an opportunity to have a fresh start. And that's because even with as innovative as the Metro interface is for tablet devices, there's...
Or at the very least, unique. At the very least, you can say about Metro and the current Windows 7 interface, the Windows Mobile 7 interface.
Right.
But the very least you can say about it, it is unique. It is not a copy of iOS.
No, it's not. It is its own thing.
At all. It is its own thing, yeah.
Yeah. And so if you look at what the Metro interface for Windows 8 is, for mobile devices, I think it could have a chance of actually being really good. The problem is that you have the Microsoft mentality, which is the same everywhere. So their idea is to make tablets that you plug in keyboards and mice, and then putting a mobile interface on the desktop. And this is where the big problem is going to be, I think, for Microsoft. When I have seen demos of Windows 8 Metro interface on mobile devices, I look at it and go, actually, you know, I can see where this would work really well for the small screen touch setup. When you put it on a desktop, though, I think it falls down. And I think it's actually a really bad interface for the desktop. And that's going to be a problem because Microsoft is doing what they've always done, which is everything to everyone and everything for every device.
Right. Right. And instead, they should be launching that fantastic foothold they have in the living room with the Xbox. You know, if they want to make the tablet an extension of something, it should be an extension of the Xbox as their entry into this market, not an extension of the desktop.
I agree, and yet that's not the route that Microsoft is taking,
right?
Which I think is unfortunate.
Right, and do you remember? Did we already mock Tony Sakanagi last week? Was that because I know I was talking to another Wall Street analyst last week and about that, about Tony Sakanagi's question, and we didn't talk about that during our show last week, did we?
Okay. Now here's the funny thing. We did one show in how many months? And it was only days ago, and I can't remember if we talked about Tony Sakanagi.
Well, you know, we talk about a lot of things, throughout the week. But Tony Sakanagi asked Tim Cook. He's an analyst. He's a big time analyst. He's actually mostly a highly regarded analyst outside of me. And he asked Tim Cook why Apple was. Basically, he was asking why Apple is missing the boat on this convergence thing that Microsoft is all about. And it's just fascinating to me. Just absolutely fascinating. You know, Microsoft has done nothing but stumble in the mobile space, and yet Apple is supposed to be following Microsoft's lead in his mind. I mean, that's just fascinating. I can't even imagine the thought processes to get you there.
Maybe he's still bitter about the whole UMPC thing.
He could be. Like I said, Tony is highly regarded among investors. He just doesn't seem to grok Apple. He's just one of those guys that's kind of stuck in the computing paradigms established by Microsoft starting in the 80s, you know, the open licensing model and everything. And he just can't quite grasp the value proposition of the whole widget. That's really what it comes down to. I mean, it's
true.
Yeah.
And Tim's response to him was a response that I think will be quoted for years.
Yep.
Or at least referenced.
Yep.
And for those of you that missed it, Tim's comeback was, and I'm paraphrasing except for very specific words, that doing the converged devices just really doesn't work out that well. And then he said, you can put a refrigerator and a toaster together, but that's not going to be pleasing to the customers. And so immediately we had the toaster fridge.
Yep.
And I think within minutes of him saying that, there was a Twitter account online, the toaster fridge.
Right.
And it was tweeting about how upset it was that Tim Cook said that it wasn't a good device. And it turned into a meme before Apple's earnings conference call had even ended.
Yeah. That's great. Why don't we include a link in the show notes to the little video that John posted yesterday.
Oh, yes. Someone did a video of the toaster fridge.
Yep. And for our readers' entertainment and our chat room, our TMO Towers chat room, when we we told everybody that we were starting to record this episode, Adam Christensen said, "Wait, you know it's the beginning of the month, right? Not the end?"
That's just awesome. Which means, Adam, we should just stop right now because it's not the end of the month.
We could just release this in like 10-minute sections once a week.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. All right, so back to this thing. Barnes & Noble and Microsoft. What Barnes & Noble is getting is cash to goose Nook development to basically make sure that they have the infrastructure for Nook to be a solid business. They are potentially positioning it ahead of time to survive Barnes & Noble's own demise in that eventuality. And Microsoft is, and of course the lawsuit is over, and what Microsoft is getting is access to content and bolstering an enemy of their enemy.
Right. So as far as the gamble goes, Barnes & Noble's on the better end, I think. Because they got the money, they got the royalty-free licensing to patents.
Right.
And Microsoft is betting on the future. So there you go.
You know, there's another thing Microsoft's getting out of this. It was the enemy of my enemy line that made me think about this. The success that Barnes & Noble has with the Nook is success that does not benefit Google, who actually makes the operating system that Barnes & Noble uses for its color tablet.
Oh, yeah.
So, really, they're bolstering the enemy of two of Microsoft's enemies, Amazon and Google, and Apple, of course.
Well, that's very clever of them.
Yeah. And, I mean, of course, in the future, it's actually possible that Barnes & Noble could end up using Windows 8 for a color tablet instead of Android. I kind of doubt that, but it's certainly
possible.
I really
doubt that. Certainly, but now possible. That I've said that, it's probably a done deal.
So I don't know. Interesting stuff. And I don't think we mentioned that Microsoft is going to own for their $300 million. They're going to own just what, 18% of this business?
That sounds about right. I think somewhere between 16% and 18%. That sounds about right.
Yeah. So they don't even have a controlling interest. So they can't force Barnes Enoble to actually do anything that Barnes Enoble doesn't want to do.
Which is okay, I think.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. It's okay for Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, and since it's okay for me as well, then there we go. What more do we need?
Exactly. All right, so we had two other topics that we wanted to talk about today, and all three of them are related, so we can kind of jump to either one. Which one do you want to go with?
Let's talk about the IDC report.
Okay, why don't you tell us what the IDC report is? That was your story, I think.
Actually, it was, only hours ago. Okay, so IDC has a new report out where they looked at worldwide market share for tablets. And so they said for the first calendar quarter of 2012 that Apple was the reigning leader with I have to pull the figures out of my memory. 68%? Yeah. Okay. 68% of the tablet market worldwide.
In the first quarter or in March?
In the first quarter.
First quarter, okay.
And for the last calendar quarter of 2011, they were at like 57% or 54%.
Right. So Apple gained share during the quarter.
Yes. So they gained share. And Amazon, who was in second place behind Apple in the fourth quarter of 2011, they were at like 16.5% or just under 17%.
Right.
And their market share dropped to 4%.
Wow, that is a huge drop. It almost sounds like that a whole bunch of people bought Fires and then sort of left them sitting around and didn't do much with them, and then that led to nobody buying them last quarter.
Blasphemer! The Fire is the iPad killer!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get you some room up here in this street corner soapbox.
Yeah, let me throw on my burlap sack. And nothing else. Yeah. So anyhow, Amazon's market share dropped dramatically. And I think you nailed at least part of what made that happen.
I'm good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, you are. I think another piece of that is that the last quarter of the year is when the Fire really went on sale. And there was a lot of interest in it. So you had the holiday season, you had people buying this brand new device, and then a lot of people realized, oh, it's not the poor man's iPad. This isn't the cheap do-it-all tablet that I thought I was buying. And so they set it down and didn't use it. And other people didn't buy it.
Yep. Yeah, no one's talking about it.
No.
No one's talking about, let me rephrase that. No one's talking about all the great things that they're doing with their Fire. I mean, and do not get us wrong. We know that there are people out there that like the Fire. And I believe that I speak for Jeff and I both when I say that we think that there are many people for whom the Fire is a fine device.
Absolutely. I think the Fire is a really great device if you're looking for a tablet form factor that will give you easy access to Amazon content as a consumer. So it's a consumption device. And I think it's a perfectly good ebook reader if you don't want to have a bigger screen for watching a TV show or a movie. It's perfectly fine for that. But this is not a productivity device.
No, and it doesn't consume. It doesn't consume content as well as the iPad either.
No, but if you're an Amazon customer and that's where you really like to get a lot of your content and do a lot of your online purchasing, it's a great portal into Amazon.
Right.
And the people that I know that are using it that way really like it.
Right. Right.
And there you go. So in that respect, I think Amazon totally nailed it.
Right. But it's not the kind of thing you just want to pick up and play with.
No.
And I think that's what we're seeing reflected in these numbers. You know, when Amazon was really clever in the timing of the Fire's release. It was just 6 weeks before Christmas. And that price was right at the sweet spot for a significant other and important people gifts.
Yes.
And so, you know, a lot of these things were purchased as gifts rather than as I want this for myself. And, you know, which means that a lot of people that got them didn't necessarily want them or were really all that interested in the product in the first place. And, you know, all that plus the cheap quality of the device combined to leave a lot of them sitting around. And how many units does IDC think Amazon sold in the first quarter?
In the first quarter, less than 750,000.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure, those are numbers that Motorola would just love to have.
Okay, yeah, there's that.
Snark!
Or RIM.
Or RIM. Maybe was anyone bigger? What kind of numbers did they have for Samsung?
Samsung was second place, and I can't recall the numbers off the top of my head. So it was Apple, Samsung, Amazon, and then Barnes & Noble and other companies after that.
Can I offer a brief rant?
Oh, please do. You know, unless it's about me.
It's not about you.
Then please do.
So first of all, Full disclosure slash massive self-plugging. I have finished, as Jeff knows, I finished a novel that I am in the process of trying to sell. So I'm looking for a literary agent. Are there any literary agents in the sci-fi world who are interested in checking out my manuscript? Please let me know. Now, that said, in the process, and the reason why I mentioned that is in the, well, besides obvious self-interest, studying up and researching my publishing options and the state of publishing today, where the publishing industry is going. Of course, we've had all the stories about Apple and publishing, with the DOJ going after Apple and five of the six major publishers in the U.S. over pricing collusion. And then, of course, the Kindle Fire and all of the research about Amazon that product has entailed. All of this stuff makes me see Amazon as an extension of Dell and Walmart, and what those companies represent. And that's mainly the rush to the bottom. And what I, and the Fire, I think, sort of exemplifies Amazon's potential impact on the world of devices, where this rush to the bottom gives us poor quality. I think getting cheap stuff is obviously powerful and alluring. And, you know, being able to buy $200 tennis shoes for $117 or you know, I just bought Joss Whedon's Dr. Horrible Sing-Along blog on Blu-ray for $8.99 from Amazon.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. You know, on and on and on. The allure of cheap products is obviously a powerful one. But the end result of all this efficiency that Amazon is bringing into the delivery of goods is going to result in there not being enough profits to make good stuff, which is what Dell did to us. It's what Dell did to the PC world.
Yeah, Dell dove to the bottom of the market very quickly. And I don't mean market share, but to the bottom of the market with prices and quality, I think. And they drove
pushing out all profits.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because in the end, it's consumers that end up with crappy products.
Right. Well, it's unfortunate. To me, it's unfortunate. I mean, some people think it's just great to be able to have, you know, computers for $300. But, you know, I mean, the reason why I'm willing to pay Apple's prices is because I think that the quality is much higher, and because I appreciate the innovation that Apple brings, both in terms of hardware and software. And I don't know. I just I worry about the. Well, I don't really worry about it. I
lament.
Lament so much better. I'm glad that the Fire is not taking off. I like my iPad. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
You know, the iPad is a really great product.
And the iPad is not possible without having margins that make developing goods like the iPad possible. And Amazon's business model leaves no room for those kinds of margins.
Well, see, I think there's a big difference in Apple's business reasoning behind creating the iPad and Amazon's business reasoning behind creating the Kindle and Kindle Fire. In Apple's case, they're looking to make hardware that is compelling, useful, and valuable to their customers. What Amazon is looking to do is make hardware that makes it easier for them to sell more product, because Amazon is a retailer, Apple is a hardware maker.
Yeah.
And that's it for my point.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, so now while we're at it, we've got our third topic.
Oh, holy crap. Speaking of Amazon, how about if we talk about Amazon?
Yeah. What did they announce something else today?
Yes. So about a year ago, Amazon created a new business called Amazon Studios, where they started looking around for scripts for movies and started working on some original movie projects. And what they announced...
Wait, movies only?
Yes.
Okay.
Initially. What changed today is that now they want to start producing their own television shows. And these are shows that will be shown on their own streaming service. And so what is that? Amazon Instant Play? Something like that.
Right.
And so they're looking to start producing comedies, like sitcoms, stuff like that, and children's programming. And so they've started soliciting the public for scripts. And what they're going to end up doing is picking a different script each month, producing essentially a pilot episode for the show, putting it out on their streaming service, and letting their viewers tell them what they think. And if the show gets a positive enough response, then it'll get picked up as a series. And so Amazon is now actively working on their own media entertainment distribution system, where they will be sidestepping the networks and the traditional broadcast methods.
And even YouTube.
And even YouTube. And so now we have Netflix saying, or Netflix actually producing their own original content. Hulu has just started producing their own original content. YouTube announced a new channel targeting women today with original content. And here we have Amazon as well. So
Yahoo is also announcing some new efforts to produce original programming.
So we have all of these companies that are now getting in the market where traditionally it's been controlled by networks and TV studios.
Right. And where the internet is the distribution vehicle.
Yeah. So on one hand, that's really cool, because we're starting to see a shift in how entertainment is produced and distributed. And on the other hand, it's kind of scary, because this is going to put studios and the internet service providers like Comcast, the broadband companies, on the defensive. And so my concern is that as we start getting more content like this, assuming the programming is good and people have fewer and fewer reasons to pay for a monthly subscription for a TV package through Comcast or Dish or whoever, that we will see people essentially cutting that cable cord but keeping their broadband internet. And then we'll have companies like Comcast coming up with new and unique ways to make it incredibly difficult or expensive for us to have cable, internet, get at content like this. And I think that I will be wailing and gnashing my teeth and ranting at some point in the future about that very thing.
Yep, very, very possible. And, you know, it kind of begs the question of... With Apple supposedly wanting to enter the television set business, and more importantly, with Apple long, this isn't even a rumor. We know that Steve Jobs pursued the networks and studios for licensing content to be streamed a la carte through iTunes. right? So we know that Apple's wanted to do that for a long time. Those rumors come packaged along with stories that Apple wanted to set up basically a sort of alternative to cable TV by letting you get all of your programming through iTunes. And, it almost kind of seems like maybe Apple should be considering producing its own content, too.
Do you remember those rumors?
Yes. I forgot about that, but that's a good point. Why don't you catch us up?
All right. So was it a couple years ago, I think? Time flies when you're having fun. Rumors started popping up that Apple was actively looking at creating their own studio, in essence, and contracting for original content and having their own TV shows that were available through iTunes.
Right. And, of course, Apple has very good relations with ABC/Disney.
Right. So they could have gotten some content there.
Yeah.
And they could have gone to independent studios for other content. And so what the rumors about Apple doing a year or two ago turns out to be exactly what Amazon and Netflix and Hulu and Yahoo and YouTube are doing now.
Yep. Yeah, so that's interesting stuff, and I kind of I think that Yahoo is a lot more invested in the notion of providing its own content than Amazon is. I think that the same thing can be said for Google in that they have YouTube is not just a side project. You know, YouTube is basically a subsidiary within the Google structure.
Right.
You know, with people that are dedicated to it. Plus, you know, we've seen that Google is increasingly putting more and more effort. Or I'm sorry, that YouTube has grown and offered more services, more infrastructure, more all the channels, all the professional content deals that they work out. So Google is clearly dedicated to this. Yahoo is dedicated to this. You know, Yahoo is very much trying to find ways of diversifying its business away from search. I kind of wonder about Amazon's ability to enter this market. You know, what kind of commitment are they going to be able to give to it? It's just not germane to their core business at all.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem to be. But I'm wondering if in a way that they're holding close to their chest, it actually is. And I say that because Amazon has also been working to sidestep book publishers, and they have created their own publishing company for ebooks.
Yeah.
And so maybe part of their master plan is, as a retailer, to be able to increase their profits by cutting out other companies from the production process for whatever the content is, books, TV shows, movies.
Well, and you know, I think it was. I think that Jeff Bezos went to a boardroom meeting and said, guys, we still got this, you know, this $100 million, $68 million, whatever it is we made last quarter that we eked out on top of this, these billions and billions in retail sales, and we just got to figure out a way to make that go away too. So let's start making our own TV shows and movies. That's what I think it was. It's just really, really frustrated that his people are still able to make a profit.
You know, that's just got to burn him.
I kid. You know, this is funny. I'm smack talking Amazon, and there's always the possibility I'm going to end up having to self-publish through Amazon.
The the irony will be pointed out to you on more than one occasion.
Excellent.
Sure. Oh, yes.
Hold my feet to the fire. Make me twitch and squirm and resent or not resent, what's the word?
Repent.
Hate what I said.
And you can hate it all the way to the bank as you're cashing your royalty checks for your stunning book sales.
Right.
Because it actually is a really good book.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm not saying that, and I'm not using actually in the sense like, oh my God, I'm surprised. It was a really good book.
I don't know, man. Most books aren't good. I think anyone entitled to be surprised when they do read a good one, especially from someone who hasn't gotten a publishing deal yet.
Yeah, well, there was one point when Stephen King didn't have a publishing deal either.
That's true. I am no Stephen King in both the good ways and the bad ways.
Well, you know, I guess that's how nature balances itself out.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, but anyway, thank you. All right, well, there you have it. Amazon TV, iPad number one.
And
Barnes & Noble, Nook, and Microsoft.
Yeah. Huh. Wow, we got through everything.
Yeah.
Go us.
Go us.
All right. Well, oh. Since this is the second week in a row we've done this, I think I remember what comes next.
Right.
It's the part where I say, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And you almost started talking when you weren't supposed to.
Did. I maybe, I don't know, another month of this, I'll get it down again.
Yeah. So, all right. Okay, here's the next part. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. That would be at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/TMOBrien. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed. You never know when we'll do another show.
That's true. We'll see you online in the meanwhile at the Mac Observer.